as the Australia Day public holiday comes to a close. The debate around the date and the meaning of Australia Day continues. For some, it's a deeply painful day. For others, a chance to celebrate. Ken Wyatt, the first Indigenous person to be Minister for Indigenous Australians, says commemorations around the country should mark both the good and the bad of the nation's history. Ken Wyatt joins us now. Minister, welcome.
Hi, it's great to be with you, Patricia.
As an Indigenous Australian, is the date of Australia Day difficult for you personally?
No, because I've reached a point in life where I look at what we've achieved now. I know where I've come from. Being born in the 50s, Australia was quite tough. And there was a different attitude to Aboriginal people. And I look at today and we see the inclusiveness in so many areas that was very different to then. Same as the names I used to be called. I don't hear those as often. They're very rare. And so on that basis, I see a nation that's come together and will continue to forge ahead. But I think that people have the right to express their views. There is a dark history that is embedded in the treatment of Indigenous Australians back in the early days of the colony and in other intervening periods because of government policies. But I'm also seeing a significant shift.
You say there's no appetite to change the date, but that's been slowly shifting, hasn't it? And it could shift further.
Well, it might do, but we've got to consider there's probably 18 million Australians who would need to have a say on this issue. And I certainly see marches where the numbers might be 2,000, but that's only 2,000 out of the 13 or 14 million. As time goes by, I think the debate will mature, and at some point, and I've always said this, when we become a republic, then the date will be very different. But in the meantime, people need to keep having the conversations around tables and barbecues and exploring what other options there are, because at some point, the mood in Australia may change, where they say, yeah, let's change the date and you have a significant majority. That then places any government in a different context to how they react to that.
Are they really a small but loud minority?
I think if we take just the numbers who march, then you could extrapolate that they're a small number. If there are many other quiet Australians who believe strongly and that becomes evident over a period of time, then governments will have to respond.
And do you expect that that will happen at some point?
Look, I think we will see people have the debate, and then it ultimately time will tell as to whether we remain a country as we are now or whether there's another push for a republican statehood that's very different. But let's see how things evolve. But yesterday what I saw was certainly I talked to some of the protesters when I went to the Barak Festival, some very strong backers. When I went up to them, the first one who had heckled me at the beginning of my speech on stage, said, "I'm sorry, can I give you a hug?" And he gave me an incredible hug and said, then we stood and we chatted. And he said, "You know, nothing against you." He just said, "I'm just protesting at the Australian people for not, well, for wanting to continue to have Australia Day on this day." And we had a great conversation. I had conversations with many others who were part of the march, and most of them again talked to me about local issues. Herbert spoke to me about his community, Lockridge, and wanting me to go out there and sit down with them and have a discussion about how we can move forward on some challenges he has with his, within his community. And I've given him an undertaking, I'll do that.
Changing the date, of course, doesn't change the history. How much more honest do we need to be about the history?
That's the question. And that's the crux of what I want to do with truth-telling. When I first read about the Mile Creek massacre outside of the Pinjarra massacre and others that have happened in Western Australia, that was much more public than ours. But what I liked was the way in which the non-Indigenous and Indigenous community have come together, and there is now a monument that tells the truth of what happened. And we'll see more and more of that. And if we look at some of the journals that have been written by early settlers, some of the pastoral owners and some of the things that were done on pastoral stations, a book I read by Stephen Hawke, who told some harrowing stories about what happened to Indigenous men on some of those stations, what happened to women. all of that needs to come out, because we don't want retribution. All we want is the true history of this nation told. And it's tended to be one-sided. And the whole debate around Bruce Pascoe's book goes to the way in which somebody does research, uses particular journals and sources, and then writes about a topic that he wishes to explore. And equally, that's been challenging for some people, but in the fires, in the aftermath, they've discovered eel traps that were built by Aboriginal people. So they showed there was some evidence that there were the structures built. So we shouldn't discount everything. It's part of the debate, it's part of the discussion.
You mentioned Bruce Pascoe and the debate around there. Will you ask for resignations by members of your advisory council on A Voice to Parliament? And specifically, I'm asking about member Josephine Cashman, who's criticised Bruce Pascoe and questioned his Aboriginal identity.
No, I won't ask people to resign, any member to resign. What I will do is allow, in the first instance, for the group to collectively have a discussion with those individuals as to their views. But what's more important is I want them to focus on getting the voice right. Because every time, Patricia, I go to a community, I have people who say to me, forget about these national voices. Who's listening to us? Who's listening about three elders living in a tin shed because they can't get a house? Who's listening about how we get better health? And so I want them to think about models of how we hear community, but also hear regional voices. We've got a set of national peak bodies who focus within very specific areas and are advocates for the organisations that they have responsibility for. But this process is about getting it right at all levels, because I do want to see a voice to government and ultimately Parliament, so that our views are reflected within the thinking of the members of the Australian Parliament, and they are used to influence the way in which some legislation is crafted.
Are you concerned about the conduct of Josephine Cashman, who's on your committee?
I'm disappointed. Often when we challenge somebody's identity, we don't go public. We tend to ask the individual, we tend to ask communities. But doing a public debate creates an opportunity for those who live with the notion that we take still the old practice of full bloods, half caste, quarter caste, quadroons, and they keep it alive by saying, oh, they can't be Aboriginal because they're fair skinned. But as we marry into different cultural groups, we don't do what other nations do. We tend to still have our genetical links to our indigeneity, but we take on many of the attributes of the partner we married, and in our children, that's reflected. And so we will have Indigenous kids who don't fit the descriptors of what some people in this society see as the true Aboriginal, and yet they are true in every sense. And I know this is impacting on many people, and I had people come up to me yesterday saying they were concerned at Josephine's open process in attacking Bruce Pascoe, because they said they're now having people say, well, you can't be Aboriginal, your skin's as fair as Bruce Pascoe's. And that's an outcome I did not want to see.
So given that, and you say you're disappointed in the way that she's conducted herself, why should she remain on this committee?
Well, I want to let the first meeting happen, or the second meeting of the National Committee, because I want to give her the opportunity of talking with her peers about the stand she's taken, the impact that's, and they will have questions for her, and then I will consider some options. I can terminate as a minister because it's a ministerial body that I've appointed people to, but I also want her to have the opportunity of talking with her peers.
Minister, before I let you go, Sky News is reporting that a staffer working for Bridget McKenzie had concerns about the sports grants and raised them directly with her chief of staff. They were told this is how the minister wants to do it and we have to abide by that. Given these latest revelations, is her position tenable? Should she resign?
Look, internal staff matters, not within the public domain. And often, and I went through this, Patricia, as you will recall, where the internal machinations between individuals became something greater than what it was. But look, I know that Bridget McKenzie would have worked very closely with her agency and would have worked within the framework of the intent of the funding program. And certainly many organisations have been successful and have moved ahead. And I'm particularly pleased that women have been the greater beneficiary of many of these grants.
Three cabinet ministers, Senator McKenzie herself, Josh Frydenberg, and actually you secured nearly $500,000 of funding for grassroots sports clubs in your electorates. You were a member of a club that received money, but you disclosed your membership. Tell me about that process of that disclosure. Were you making that disclosure because you were aware of the difficulties around this, the transparency issues?
I always declare, if I'm asked to be a patron, I write back and accept patronage, and then I always list it on my members' interests. That's been standard ever since I've been in politics. What I do when a grant is announced, whether it's sport or any other one, community grants, for example, I will write to every organisation within my electorate and then provide them with the information, and then they go through the process and submit their applications, and we allow due process to occur. But I've always been a strong advocate with my community in encouraging them to apply for grants. And in fact, we provide a list of grants to many organisations. If they come and see us and say, are there funding avenues, we provide them with a list of Commonwealth grants, state grants, and even little ones like Bank West have Bank West accounts, grants they give for community awards. There's Perth Airport gives community grants.
Okay, so you go through that process. Should Bridget McKenzie have done the same?
Look, I think she would probably do the same.
She didn't declare. That was the issue.
She may have overlooked that. Every time we get asked to do something as an involvement in an organisation, even Rotary have asked me to become a member of their organisation. When I do accept that, I will list it.
Will she survive the week, Minister?
Look, that's for the National Parties to consider, and I know that the Prime Minister has referred the matter for investigation. We'll await to see what the outcome of that, and that's a matter for the leader of the National Party.
But isn't it an issue for the Prime Minister?
Well, it is, and that's why he's referred it for investigation.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
No, it's been a pleasure.
And that is, of course, the Minister for Indigenous Australians, Ken White. This is RN Drive. Patricia Carvelis with you. Our number here, 0418-226-576. That's the text line, not the call line. I know you know, but just a reminder, we don't take calls, but we do take your texts. And I'd love to hear your views on a range of issues that we traverse there, from Australia Day and the date, and whether there is a certain inevitability about whether the date may change, which is something we talked about there with the minister, and also these revelations that a staffer working for Bridget McKenzie voiced concerns that were silenced in relation to this sports grants program. 0418 226 576.